All right. So our next presenter is Alan Chambers. You have the floor.
Thank you. This podium cramps my style. I like to walk around the room because it makes the audience uncomfortable, and it's only fair, right? I'm uncomfortable, you're uncomfortable. We're going to be talking a little bit about establishing fruit breeding in southern Florida. We have a rich history of horticultural excellence in Florida, a number of crops, lots of faculty. But especially in southern Florida, I'm the first tropical fruits breeder down there at Trek. Just a little bit of an outline, a little bit about me, some context where I am. Trying to take tropical fruits as a huge world obviously wasn't going to be possible for such a short time frame. So I'm going to give you three case studies. You can consider them bedtime stories. For those of you who are on the Eastern time zone, it's 1 a.m. right now. And I chose to do a vanilla example last because whenever I tell people what I do, whenever I get to vanilla, that's where we stop and we talk about vanilla for the next half hour. So I want to get some good stuff first, and then we can get to vanilla and you guys can stop me there and I won't get to conclusions. So degrees in genetics, plant pathology, and horticulture. I actually got my PhD at the University of Florida working with genetics of aroma, of strawberry. Then went to go work for PepsiCo, mostly focusing on their Quaker Oats brand, trying to make more nutritious and better flavor oats. Then it came, I was either going to move to Minnesota with the company or look for alternative employment, and then tropical fruits in southern Florida. I'm just fortunate to be able to have it. So I'll say, as apologies to everyone else, I pretty much have the best job on the planet. It is literally a job that keeps me up at night because it is so exceptionally awesome. I have a post-it notepad next to my nightstand with a pen for those nights where I just can't stop thinking about ideas, and I take those to work and implement those. My position is focused on new crops, new cultivars, and the tropical fruit space, not only is it huge, but it's just a mess. And with the diversity of crops, there's a difference between projects and programs. I would say a program is a year-over-year breeding program, but as opposed to some larger markets, my stakeholders, the growers, are smaller growers. And so for me to pick one commodity and focus on them really wouldn't be serving the needs of the community. So it makes my job more fun. There's more delicious things to eat. It also brings some challenges with it. I don't know how many people here have built their logic model. So I've been in this position for a year, and this took 1/25th of that time. But it also is a map for how I'm going to be successful. Really, it starts with growers, understanding their needs, their challenges, and this is how we work through that system with the grower so that in 5 years or 10 years, when we deliver something amazing, it's exactly what they want, not necessarily something that was just easy to make for them. So the Tropical Research and Education Center, again, if I could walk over there for the recording, I won't. There's a little dot right at the tip of Florida. Below us, you have pretty much the Keys and ocean. So to just the north of us, we have Miami, huge urban area. To the west of us, we have the Everglades, and to the east of us, we have ocean. And so we're very constrained in this area, but it is a very successful agricultural system there. But it's very diversified. So lots of different crops, lots of diversity of the people as well, where Caucasians are probably about 10% of the population. So a lot of different languages spoken, a lot of different needs for ethnic foods as well, just adding to the complexity of the system. So not to use this as an excuse, but Hurricane Irma was not on my calendar when I was preparing for this talk. This was a fun storm, my first one in southern Florida, that actually ended up enveloping the whole state and destroying some rather beautiful banana plants, as you can see here. Part of the limitations of tropical fruits include unexpected weather events. We can talk about the long-term destructive capabilities of global warming as well as the short-term impacts of things like hurricanes. So we build in a type of flexibility into our programs as we manage the short-term, medium-term, and long-term with the understanding that your field plots could be blown over any June 1st through the end of November. So case study number one, for those of you who love mangoes, I'm one of those. At our field site, we have 150 different kinds of mangoes. Only some of those, a few trees, are dedicated to the export mango, the Tommy Atkins, which is one of the worst tasting mangoes available. But it does ship well and it produces well. In Florida, though, we're interested in higher quality, non-commodity crops, niche crops that the grower doesn't have to compete with something coming from South America. We have a lot of diversity in mango, a lot of different flavors, textures, acidity levels, levels of sweetness. One of the biggest challenges, though, is the juvenility period. So if you want to talk about a mango breeding program, there is one group that I'm aware of in Australia that will actually go and hand pollinate to try to make crosses. It's extremely inefficient, and it takes a long time to go from seed to fruit. Here's a number of examples that we're taking learnings from temperate fruit trees. There's been a lot more work in these, and so we're taking those learnings and applying those to tropical fruits. So as you can see here, from apple to citrus, pear, plum, the time it takes to go from a seed to a flowering tree, we've got a number of years, and I'm an impatient person, and there are a lot of other impatient people as well. So we were able to hijack the flowering pathway at the molecular level and bring from 6 to 10 years down to a couple of months, maybe down to 1 year. This is one of the first projects. I've got a student working on this. And if we're able to bring that breeding cycle down to 1 year, we can finally start to have the discussion of mango breeding. Right now, it is someone has a mango tree or they have a fruit and they love it and they plant it. 5 to 10 years later, ooh, we've got a new exciting one. I'm going to name it after my mother, and I'm going to sell it. And that's where we get most of our mango varieties. Not efficient, and by no means are we guiding that selection process. The end result of this, this is a transgenic approach, but the released cultivar is not transgenic. So in terms of consumer acceptance, we think it'd be more favorable. Papaya is a very successful industry in Florida that's limited primarily by papaya ring spot virus. So similar to the story here with Dennis Gonzalez's work years ago, decades ago, our viral strains are somewhat different. And so when I came to the site, you can see here an example of a papaya that is infected with papaya ring spot virus, which necessitates the growers replanting starting at about 2 years. So after you put all that money into the seed, the labor, the fertilizer, and the management, you're starting to make money, and your trees decline and die. On the far side is a papaya ring spot virus resistant accession. This has been moved into a number of different fruit shapes, as well as flesh colors, and including the petiole colors. So this is what was existing when I showed up. Talking to growers, they want something a little bit better, and then they want to expand the acreage. What we're focusing on now is we do get a little bit of a winter in southern Florida where the temperatures drop to an amazingly frigid 50-something degrees, which is unacceptable to some of us. We brought in the diverse accessions from Hilo. We're growing those out in a somewhat protected environment, so we put the transgenic stuff around these susceptible varieties, hoping that we can make it to fruiting on these, at least to get more seed and to hopefully make some crosses. Papaya is an example of a species that does not have a lot of diversity. So whether that's because there just isn't a lot of diversity out there or you can't access a lot of that diversity. A lot of these tropical species, you're lucky if you can get one accession. That's where we turn to things like mutation populations. So we'll be growing out two of those in the field and then screening the F2 for things like dwarfs, those that perform better in the winter, novel colors, textures, and flavors. So vanilla is a fun one. So for those of you who don't know where vanilla came from, it's a little bit of an interesting legend. There was a princess morning star who was too beautiful to be given to any mere mortal. And so she was given to the goddess of crops and sustenance, where she performed worship services in the temple every day. Then there was a prince named Young Deer who would watch this princess go to and from the temple each day. And one day he was overcome with his love for Morning Star, and he kidnapped her and ran with her into the forest. And in a case of Stockholm syndrome, she also fell with him en route to the mountains. And so the two of them decided that they would elope. As they were heading into the mountains, they were turned back by a fire-breathing beast, headed back to the village, where they were intercepted by the priests of this god of sustenance and crops. The prince was killed on the spot as Morning Star watched Young Deer, killed, and then the Morning Star was then killed. Their hearts were cut out in a little bit of gory detail, and their bodies were kicked into a ravine. And then their hearts were brought back to the temple to offer as a sacrifice. But from where their blood was spilt grew a shrub, and on that shrub grew an emerald vine with beautiful green leaves, which produced a fruit of this amazing aromatic quality. So that's where vanilla came from, the blood of two ancients. We have four native species in southern Florida. Global production of orchid-based vanilla is about 80% controlled in Madagascar. And they're using, we would say, exceptionally genetically related and most likely from a single founding clone. So if you talk about narrow genetic bases and anything else, this is pretty much the top of narrow genetic bases, which means you get one aggressive fusarium and it can just go right through your planting and destroy livelihoods. This is one of my favorite ones. This was in one of our state parks, going around with park biologists. We have permits to go and collect these endangered species. So braving alligators and getting all sorts of mucky, tearing my boots apart. A little bit more adventure than I had ever anticipated. But we go and collect these native species because we believe that they have adaptability traits, things that can help them adapt to our environment, including at least two of them that are able to flower without manual pollination. So right now, those of you who enjoy your vanilla bean anything, someone has to pollinate every single flower. But somehow these are able to do it without manual pollination. So if we can move that single trait into a commercial background, then we've done something very good, especially for southern Florida. And it's also one of these, why hasn't this already been done? They've been manually pollinating these things for hundreds of years. The vanilla started just a couple months after I had started. My boss sent me this article at the very top, "The Problem with Vanilla." A lot of challenges. Growers have come to our facility asking for someone to work on vanilla, but no one was willing to give it a shot. To me, it's an exciting opportunity. There's a lot that we don't know. A lot of it's highly publishable, so for me to keep my job, right, short-term wins in publications, vanilla is a great one. We have our native species, and as far as I see, there's a lot of risk. For any of you who understand what's going on with bananas, so the Gros Michel and now the Cavendish, right, what's going on with citrus greening, those foreshadow predictions for what could happen to vanilla, and then we'll be reliant only on the artificial types. So to prepare for this presentation, I actually traveled into the future 7 to 10 years. So I know who's going to win all of the next Super Bowls. For those of you who'd like to know, I'll split it with you if you'd like to come up. Part of my logic model and where I am now is looking forward to see where do we want to be in 5 and 10 years, because breeding by nature is a very long-term process. So we went to go visit some growers just south of here. Actually, I highly recommend you go visit them. They just opened their operation as part of a vanilla tourism and value-add store. This is thevanillery.com. This is Guy and JR. And they're, like most growers, they're very proud of what they've created. So with their vanillery, They worked out a system using a vanilla species that was growing here on the islands. And now they make things, soaps, shampoos, vanilla extract, some fabulous ice cream. Again, go visit them. They're right down by the airport. I'm not getting paid for endorsing, just so you know. Where they are now is where I see Florida growers in 5 to 10 years. And so my extension appointment I take is being free enough so that I can come over here to Hawaii, especially in February, in those colder February, those Florida months, to see what their challenges were, what their opportunities were, and how we can translate those into a Florida setting. We also have an obscene cost of living. We're next to metropolitan areas, and I think that tourism is something that would really help our growers because they have to get top dollar because we can't compete with commodities. And in order for us to be successful, they need to be able to compete in, I think, this value-add space, this agro-tourism space. And at the same time, as we build relationships around the world for tropical fruits, there's a lot of questions that they have that is expertise that we're developing anyway. For example, why are they growing this vanilla genotype? It's because it's what they had. But who's to say that there aren't 10 others ready right now that, though genetically very similar, couldn't produce better for them and meet their needs better? So there's a short-term fit here that we could benefit or help with these growers. Shown here on the far side, this is Vanilla Mexicana. This is one of the most beautiful specimens. When I was out trudging through this wild area, I had to sit down on a log and just observe how amazing it was. Vanilla is a fun one. It's a fun one to work with. There's a lot of opportunities, and I'm looking forward to my own exclusive line of ice creams someday. So thank you all.